Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
This week, there's an insane amount of movies this week in the theaters.
It's ridiculous.
There's like 48 new releases and 162 limited releases.
Yes, and we have an hour. Let's go.
Let's go. We're only going to cover four of the new releases. That would be Turbo, The Conjuring, Red 2, and RIPD, which I believe that's how you say it. You don't say ripped.
I don't know.
I'm ripped. If you looked at me without my shirt on,
yeah,
I'm ripped. Not in the same way that, like...
I'm not sure which sense you mean that in, but yeah, all right.
Something's ripped. We'll also talk a little bit of news and DVDs and Blu-rays. But before that, let's go through some paperwork. How you can get a hold of us, you can go to fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com, send us an email. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. Also, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/FGATM. And if you want to reach me on Twitter and reach out to me and tell me wonderful things about myself and how ripped I am.
Yes.
You can go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
And I'm Katie K. Reviews.
That's right. Let's just go right to box office and then we'll roll into the news. Do you want to hit your news story?
Nah, it's fine. Whatever. Right. We can wing it.
Let's do box office first, because the reason I wanted to go into this is because
I know you're very excited about this.
I could declare legitimate victory.
Well, it depends if we're playing Price is Right rules.
Well, you went over two.
Well, I did.
I was so excited when I saw the estimates come out at the end of the weekend, because it was actually rounded to $45 million for Despicable Me 2, which is what I said.
Mm-hmm.
You had said $60 million for Pacific Rim.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
No.
But
here's the thing. I took my kids to an amusement park this week,
yes,
and it's exhausting. So I am achy, and things are creaking on me, and I've learned going to an amusement park now, when you're in your 40s, it's like four times as hard as when you were like half the age. Like in my 20s,
mm-hmm,
I was like, could go all day here. I barely make it to noon, and there's creaking. But even then, legitimate victory dance. You ready?
You're not going to do it. See, no, you can't do
God.
It.
Oh, God. Here we go.
How old are you?
I'm
are
twerking.
You 75? Seriously.
I'll be 75 at some point.
That was the most pathetic thing I've ever seen.
Hardly twerking.
That was kind of sad.
Legitimate victory. I'm bouncing things in the magical studio in the sky.
It's kind of sad.
I'm lightheaded now. Can you take over for me? What won the box?
Okay, we had Despicable Me 2 at $44 million, which was followed by Grown Ups 2, the best movie ever made.
Dear God, it had.
At $42 million, and Pacific Rim at $37 million.
Yeah, which actually is not bad for... They were actually... Some people were saying, estimating like $30 million or less for Pacific Rim.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's one of those movies that everybody goes out to see during the summer.
Yeah.
It's Guillermo del Toro.
Come on. This is his highest opening ever.
Really?
Yeah. It's his highest opening ever. I think his next highest opening was like Hellboy 2.
Hmm.
But he's never been a huge mainstream director.
It's true. I mean, he did Pan's Labyrinth, which, you know, definitely not a mainstream movie.
Did that win the Oscar for... That was best foreign film for the
I
Oscar.
Believe so, yes.
Nobody cares about foreign films in this
country. No.
But the other thing with Pacific Rim, I think one of the struggles it had was there's like no stars to there's no
it's true.
Movie stars.
I mean, that was one of those things. My husband asked me before I left. He's like, "So who's in this one?" I was like, "Nobody."
That guy from Sons of Anarchy that you don't recognize outside of Sons of Anarchy.
Well, I've never seen Sons of Anarchy, so you know, I was like, I don't know. There's some guys in some masks who do some robot stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean all the names probably the most recognizable person is maybe Idris Elba.
Idris Elba, definitely.
But he's sort of supporting. He had, like, the canceling the apocalypse line.
Right.
But, like, everybody else, like Charlie Hunnam, who was from Sentence of Anarchy, mm-hmm, and that's it. And then Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep.
He's in it, but again...
He's a small role. Rinko Kikuchi is in it.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah. She's adorable.
She is.
But, yeah, I think that if... And I think that's one of the reasons why Grown Ups 2 had a little bit more... connection to the mainstream, because
which is really sad.
It's so awful. $80 million was the budget for Grown Ups 2.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world of sweet coconuts does this happen? How does that cost that much money?
I would say it all went into the cast and their accommodations while we were hanging out.
You have to sit there and be like, wait a minute, I understand. Adam Sandler, but when was the last time David Spade did a movie that made more than $50? And Nick Swartzen be like, oh, the star of Bucky Larson needs a trailer of his own.
I have no idea where this money went.
I mean, maybe Salma Hayek. Kevin James and Salma Hayek and Adam Sandler, I can see justify spending that.
A little bit, yeah.
But even Chris Rock, what has he done lately?
He hasn't done much.
Yeah.
I can't think.
I Think I Love My Wife. I think that was his last movie. And that wasn't very good.
No, it was not.
Anyways, yeah, so then it was the Heat down Lone Ranger all the way down. Kevin Hart, Let Me Explain, is at $26 million. Total, which is huge for a concert film.
Still at number 9.
That's amazing.
Not bad.
Good for Kevin Hart. He deserves it more than Chris Rock did for
nice.
Grown-Ups 2. All right, but you know, the one thing about Pacific Rim, I think it's going to do extremely well overseas. It did well in Korea and Russia, but they've still got China and Japan, and that's where sort of the mythos of these movies came
from. Big.
Yep. And then finally, Despicable Me 2. Huge run overseas. It will likely be $400 million overseas by the end of the run. It's going to be a massive movie. Or it already is.
Yeah.
Anyways. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. You have a news story you wanted to highlight.
Yes. You know, we've been talking about it for a while now. The new Bond movie. And there was an official announcement this week that Sam Mendes will be back.
Yes. Not Dennis Dugan.
No.
Dennis Dugan, director of Grown Ups 2, is not directing the new Bond movie.
There was a big long list, and one of them was Nicholas Winding Refn, who did Drive, and the new Only God Forgives, which we'll talk about next week, since this week is so jam packed. And that was one that I was like, oh please no.
He's
please,
not known for giant IMAX action.
Well, Sam Mendes really wasn't either before, so. They tend to throw curveballs and put random people in this role.
Well, and that's what they did when Mark Forster.
Exactly.
You know, he hadn't done big ones like that.
You never know who they're going to put in there, but I'm kind of happy that he's back.
It's like a box of chocolate.
You never know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned it because it's...
I actually have a personal connection to this movie now.
Yes, it's amazing.
Because there's a new little boy at my daughter's daycare.
Yeah.
His name is James. James B, because there are two Jameses.
Of course.
And, his name is James Bond.
That's awesome.
Seriously, his parents named him James Bond, and it makes me sad for this little boy.
Does he come in wearing a tuxedo?
No, you know, he's a messy little one-year-old with, like, a little afro. I totally walked in there expecting to see him with, like, slick back hair and, you know,
I'll take
all
my apple juice shake and not stirred.
No, yes, he's got, like, fluffy little hair, and he's really cute. And I was like, oh... Poor child, you have a rough road ahead of you.
James Bond.
One of my friends commented on Facebook that he probably likes his bottles shaken, not stirred.
There you go. Yeah. See, yeah, how is he with the ladies? I mean, has your daughter like?
Oh, she is staying
swoon?
far from him. That's it. Mm-hmm.
She is like none of this spy nonsense.
She is not allowed to go near him. We've already talked about it. She can't. That's the rule.
Does he walk in and throw his, like, beanie and then have it land on the coat rack? Hello, Miss Moneypenny.
Yes, he's definitely brought a whole new environment to the daycare down the street.
The kid has no idea why this is. Why kids go, oh, my God, James Bond! And the kid's like, what? Now, if he was named, like, Tinky Winky or something like that,
yes,
the kids might get it.
Apparently, it's a family name.
Well, but... Bond, generally, Kramer's a family name.
James.
Oh,
Bond is a family name, Kevin. So, like his grandfather was James Bond, and it goes way back. But that still doesn't make it right. I mean, you call him Jimmy, or go by his middle name. Just leave the kid alone. This kid's gonna take such a beating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I knew a guy growing up named Charlie Brown, and that was again a family name.
Yeah, that's.
And like at some point, you just got to stop it.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Yeah. But yeah, no, James Bond. That's actually really awesome. I we were talking off the air. We know somebody who his last name's Bauer, and he named his son Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid will like blow up a car with like Play-Doh.
There you go.
And an olive branch.
At least for him, the show's off the air now. So, so you know, he's not going to have to live with it for the rest of his life. I mean, James Bond, it just keeps going.
It's
going
to be there forever.
Yes.
All right. When we go to, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the new movies.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer-Kramer and Kevin Carr. We were talking about James Bond just a second ago.
Bond.
James Bond. The third.
So awesome. I'm sure there's like 9,000 people like in every state named James Bond.
You think there are that many now? Do you think people keep doing it?
Oh, yeah.
I guess people name their kids Aspen after ESPN.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah. That's a dumb name.
It's terrible.
I'm not a sports fan.
People have all kinds of wacky names for their children. So I guess it probably happens. They really don't care what their kids think later.
No.
I mean,
kids aren't arguing when they come,
it's
come out
true.
Of the home.
He looks like a James Bond to me.
Yeah.
Let's name him James.
Nice.
Anyway, let's talk about some movies since we have like 40,000 of them to cover this week.
Yes, 40,000. So, let's get cracking.
40,000. Okay. Up first is The Conjuring. Insidious director James Wan returns with the true horror story of a family's move to a haunted house in Rhode Island and the demonologists who come to their rescue.
It's November 1st, 1971. I'm sitting here with Carolyn Perrin, who, with her family, has been experiencing supernatural occurrences.
You picking up anything in here, hon?
Something awful happened here, Ed. You have a lot of spirits in here, but there's one that I'm most worried about because it is so hateful. We have to get out of here.
That's not gonna help.
This thing has latched itself to your family.
Father, we never seen nothing like this.
I just wet myself.
Just because of the...
oh, it has nothing to do with the movie. No.
You're just really tired.
It was
old.
A long week.
I know.
Now, you don't like... Well, we talked about this the other week. You're not a huge fan of horror movies, but...
This is the kind of horror movie that I can get into. I like ghost stories and things like that. I don't like torture porn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my thing. Mm. So...
Take out the torture. I'm okay with it.
I know you are. So things like this, like, I loved Insidious.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it at a film festival in a crowded theater.
Best way to see it.
And there was a screamer behind me, and it was the greatest thing ever. Because, you know, you're getting up to that point, and you're all, you know, all tense, and somebody just shrieks bloody murder behind you, and it is the greatest thing in the world.
Awesome.
So Insidious was awesome.
Mm.
This one was still good. Not quite Insidious.
It's not as... one thing with Insidious... They use sound a lot in Insidious. They used loud noises, soft noises. They didn't do it as much with this one, which I thought was okay because, you know, shake it up a little bit.
Sure.
Mix it up.
Yeah.
So it is different. It's not just rehash of Insidious.
Right. I mean, this movie, like, James Wan holds nothing back.
Mm-hmm.
He throws in every single creepy prop that you can imagine. I mean, we've got music boxes and creepy dolls, and we've got a haunted house with, you know, a hidden... dungeon in it with all webs and creepy old things. I mean, if there's something that could possibly give you the creeps, it's in here.
What's great about this movie is it starts out with a possessed... It's just like this side story.
I know.
That introduces and has this possessed doll. And these people are talking about, oh, well, we let it, gave it permission to come around and do... And you're like, this is the most terrifying looking creature ever.
It is. Seriously.
Why wouldn't you... why would you let this in your house to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen creepy dolls. No, this one...
Yeah, okay. that one would be outside buried in somebody else's backyard.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not letting that doll in the house.
Yeah. I loved The Conjuring. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was very old school.
Mm-hmm.
It takes place in the 70s. It feels like a 70s movie. And the difference between, like, an Insidious, they do get a... There's a point in Insidious, if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to give it away, but there's a point in Insidious where it goes into a lot of digital... uses digital...
Mm-hmm.
manipulation at one point, and there's no other way to do it.
Right.
And I was okay with that. This one never goes there. And while they used some modern techniques, it feels like it could have been made in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
And it has that very... It feels not less like Amityville Horror, because it's about the same people who investigated that. A little bit more like Amityville 2, which is not a good movie, but has the same feel to it.
I guess my one complaint about this movie is that the story is all over the place.
It is a little bit.
It is. You know, you were talking about the story in the beginning, that there's this little side story about the doll, and that kind of, you know, it pops up in little bits and pieces here and there. And then I'm still trying to figure out exactly what was going on, because there's all kinds of stuff about demons, but then it's not demons, it's witches. But then things are haunted, but then they're not ghosts. And ghosts don't exist, but there are witches. And the witches are here, but then there are demons. And there is so much, and it's so convoluted at times. And I'm like, I have no idea what this movie is about. But I'm just going to sit back and let it scare me, and that's okay.
You're right. It is kind of a tightly written, it's not very tightly written.
Yeah.
And there's like 95% of it is like really visceral and good.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like 5% that is just cheesy as all get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Corny cheese.
There are some moments that are so cheesy. And
but
you
I
know,
thought that it worked for the era.
Ron Livingston.
I think. Yeah. Well, but this would be a great companion piece to watch with like House of the Devil.
Okay.
Ty West's movie. Have you seen that?
I haven't, no.
It's another sort of this throwback. It was like takes place in the early 80s and it looks like it was shot in the early 80s. That's kind of how this feels. It feels like it was shot in the 70s.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm.
So I can respect that.
Sure.
So what's your final grade?
I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
I say it totally rocks.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Next one we're going to speed through.
Let's race through this one.
Turbo. An ambitious garden snail is suddenly imbued with super speed and becomes a contender in the Indy 500. Yeah, really, that's what it's about.
I wish I was fast.
What's happening to me?
Yeah! Slow down for a second!
Are you kidding? I'm never going slow again!
With my brains and your speed, we should be destined for greatness.
The Indy 500.
This is ridiculous. A snail cannot race in a competition meant for cars.
Wow. Aren't you just a little ray of sunshine?
I actually kind of wanted to see this one.
It's cute.
But I had to spend the weekend with my in-laws instead of going to the screening.
Oh, well.
So you got to see it. You didn't have to spend the weekend with my in-laws.
No.
Good
I avoid in-laws of all types.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. And it sounds ridiculous to say this because it's going into a field with movies about supervillains with little minions fighting Mexican wrestlers and another movie about monsters that are going to college to steal kids' screams to power their universe.
Mm-hmm.
So already, if it's an animated kids movie, it's a ridiculous premise.
It's true.
Regardless. This one, once you get past the ridiculous premise, it's a perfectly charming, fun little movie. It's cute, and it's not great. It's better than The Croods, which was DreamWorks' last movie.
Yes.
But it takes so much to get past the premise, because you're like, he's a garden snail, and they're harvesting tomatoes, and you're like, okay. And then he's like, he wants to be a racer, and you're like, okay. And he's like, he got super speed somehow. That happens.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, we'll go with that. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to do the Indy 500. And you're like, okay. And then they let him in, and you're just like, really? And
it's
just
like, but he's a snail.
Yeah, I mean, you sit there, and you're just like, I know.
Aren't there rules about that in the Indy 500? I think there are.
I felt that they needed Basil exposition from the second Austin Powers movie to be like, just deal with it, just accept it, and it's only a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just swallow the pill and go. And that's what it, but it takes an hour to just keep going, oh, this is ridiculous. Once you get past it, it's great. Little kids aren't going to care.
Once you get past that first hour, it's okay.
Well, it's not even it's just, you're like, you just keep getting thrown these curveballs of like what they're trying to do. Little kids are not going to care.
Oh, no.
Little kids are going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, snail, Indy 500? Yeah, that's happening. It took a little bit for me to just accept it. But eventually I did.
Yeah.
And it's a cute little movie. It's very much, it's trying to be Pixar because it's got that like side group of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's got two different groups of them.
Okay.
Buying for the kids, they got humans and they got snails. But they're all like voiced by famous talent and stuff like that. So it's cute. I'm giving it a kind of rocks because it's still enjoyable. When we get back, we're going to talk about Red 2 and Ripped.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. During the break, we were having a very interesting discussion about, you know, the finer points of animated films.
I was discussing the believability of films like Finding Nemo, and I'm like, it's ridiculous. A clownfish isn't going to swim across an ocean. They don't have family structure like that. That makes no sense.
Kids movies. So apparently Turbo makes no sense, but that's okay. That's what we're saying. So anyway, moving right along to another adventure.
Yes.
Let's move on to Red 2. Yes. Bruce Willis, John Malkovich, and Helen Mirren return as retired secret agents on a mission to track down a missing nuke.
Everyone misses nukes.
I know.
Get it together.
Frank, what are you doing here?
I need you.
Look, I'm retired, okay?
You haven't killed anybody in months.
That's a positive thing.
They're coming. I can feel it.
96 hours ago, somebody said you and I took part in an operation called Nightshade.
At the height of the Cold War, a Megaton device was smuggled into Moscow piece by piece and then reassembled.
11 million people are going to lose their lives if you don't help me.
Is there any way you could tell us where the bomb is?
So now, this wasn't actually a very interesting screening that you missed this week.
There was out of town.
All kinds of stuff going on. Some of our friends did not make it into this screening because of overzealous security agents.
That happens.
Security guards, they're not agents.
They're not agents.
No.
It was about agents.
They wear tweed jackets and bad glasses. It was a mess.
I don't even know if they're really security. You described them because I'm like, because always the security guards wear like a black coat.
Or, yeah.
I'm like, what are they? What, tweed? I'm like, what? Tweed?
He was wearing a tweed jacket. Yeah.
That guy just showed up.
Yeah.
He just showed up and declared himself emperor and started, like, not
throwing people out.
That's right.
I'm sorry, you're here to review the movie, but you have a Kindle. I'm sorry, you can't come in here.
Nice.
Because you never know what you can do with a Kindle in the middle of a screening.
You could throw it at somebody's face. You could throw it at a security guard's face.
Sometimes I would like to.
I love the security guards at our screenings.
Because most of the ones that we have are wonderful. We have great people who work at the screenings.
Yep.
And just not this time.
So how was the movie, though?
The movie was kind of fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed the first one. That was one that I was really looking forward to seeing. Because, really, you've got John Malkovich and Helen Mirren and Bruce Willis. And they're secret agents.
I know.
How awesome is that?
Was it as good as the first one?
Not quite.
Okay.
It isn't quite as action-packed as the first one. It still has that totally over-the-top, like, graphic novel action.
Yeah.
But it's not quite as often.
Does it have the same tone?
It does.
Okay.
It's still very graphic novel-y and comic booky, and it has the kind of stylized feel to it. The story goes a little bit all over the place, though.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that it still feels very like it's inspired by a comic book, which it is. Mm-hmm. And so it breaks up into short little segments. So you have, you know, one thing happens, they're like, okay, well, now we need to go to Paris. Mm-hmm. And then something happens there, and then, oh, okay, now we need to go to London and find out what's going on over here. And then they need to go to Moscow. And it travels all over the place, and it kind of breaks it up a little bit. And it feels like one little story here, and then another little side story over here, and then another side little story over here.
Yeah.
And toward the end, it's like, okay, the movie's over. Oh, no, we're going to go into something else now.
Oh, is it like Return of the King?
A little bit.
Oh, wow.
That there are a few false endings in this one. And you're like, okay, well, it's not done yet, because now we have to see something else.
It's sort of like Bruce Willis taking off a hat, and then you're like, oh, that's a hair piece takes off. Oh, nope, that's still you have less hair than that.
Kind of like that.
Okay.
And yeah, there are, I think the story is kind of the biggest flaw, because there are things. The action is great. The characters are wonderful. All of this stuff is great. But you try to put it all together in the little story, and you're like,
You've, like, just summarized the problem with every summer movie.
It's true.
See, the story, it's that true. Gets in, I mean, the way.
And Catherine Zeta-Jones in there, she's completely pointless.
That's what I was going to ask, because with the exception of Side Effects.
Yeah.
Her name is a terrible. I mean, she's beautiful.
There's absolutely no reason for her to be in this movie.
But I mean, like, Rock of Ages? Holy cow.
Well, yeah.
She's been in a bunch of movies lately. She's had a bit of a comeback with Garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Side Effects is the only one that I thought was any good. What else? She did like two or three last year. And they were all bad.
Yeah. And yeah, there's no point to have her in this. I have no idea who shoehorned her into this movie, but her character has no point.
Yeah.
And,
well, because she's not like in that. I mean, because,
well,
she's like in her early 40s.
Yeah, she's not in that age group. And it's just, it's not cool to see Catherine Zeta-Jones as a secret agent. You're like, yeah, whatever. I mean, Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
She pulls out an automatic weapon in her heels and a fur coat. And you're like, That's awesome.
I would let her pull her automatic weapon on me.
Seriously? I could watch her all day. And John Malkovich.
Yeah.
He is awesome. Yeah. So the two of them together, even, you know, Bruce Willis, he's cranky and he's cool. And, well, Bruce Willis is kind of a given. I mean, when has he not been in action movies for the last 30 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's kind of the given. But everybody else makes this movie so much fun.
Oh, but he's been in a he was in G.I. Joe and then he was in Die Hard.
Right.
So is this one of his better ones this year?
I would say so.
Okay. I mean, I'll be checking that one out this
weekend.
We'll see what I think.
You missed quite the adventure.
Hopefully there'll be less shenanigans happening.
Yes.
All right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Let's move on to the next movie. That is
Can we give this one a grade first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What am I doing? I'm just like, I feel so under the gun. what's your grade?
I'm going to say it kind of rocks, but it's on a high kind of rocks.
Oh, almost to rocks.
Almost to rocks, yes.
Almost to rocks.
Yep.
That'd be a note. That's a great name for a band.
Almost to rocks.
Almost to rocks.
There you go.
Bjorn to rocks. okay, now we move on.
Yes.
All right.
Do you remember what we were doing?
R.I.P.D.?
Yes.
Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges star as police officers tracking down wayward dead spirits.
Tough day.
Where am I?
You're dead.
This is a joke.
You have skills that we want.
We'd like you to join the RIPD.
The RIPD.
Rest in peace department.
Your job is catching deados, the bad souls that escape judgment.
Meet your new partner.
Come on. We are the greatest lawmen that ever lived and died. Now, some souls hide out among the living.
So that just happened.
It's basically Men in Black, only they're dead. And not aliens.
Okay.
They didn't screen this for us.
No.
They didn't screen it for anybody.
Which is never a good sign.
Especially when the movie cost $130 million to make. Whoops.
Whoa, what was that?
I don't know. That's the ghost. The dead is coming back to us. I love the fact that Jeff Bridges pretty much plays Rooster Cogburn from True Grit in this movie.
Yeah, it seems very Western-y.
And yeah, this is not a movie that anyone cares about.
A random supernatural Western cop movie.
Yeah.
But Ryan Reynolds is in it.
Yeah.
He is also in Turbo. He is the voice of Turbo.
Well, yeah, but you know what? Mary Louise Parker's in it.
I know. I was going to say that too. She's also in Red too. So everybody's doubling up this week.
I was desperately trying to find some way to connect either Turbo or Red 2 to The Conjuring, because then you'd have this link for all the movies.
But I'd have to think about that.
It'd be like, well, they have the same key grip or something like
nice.
That. The same negative cutter.
During our next break, I'll pull up IMDb and we'll look into that.
There we are. You know, let's go ahead and do box office really quick since we have a little bit of time left.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, no. Did you get your notes? I shifted things around because there's a couple news stories.
That's not in my notes. I can't do that. Okay, you start then.
There's a couple news stories I want to know.
Okay.
I think...
yes.
What's going to win the weekend? I think The Conjuring is going to win.
Okay.
And I'm going to give it $31
million. 31?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what I think. 31. And... what's yours?
I think it's going to be tight. I think The Conjuring is going to be way up there. But I have to give it to the kids' movie.
Yeah?
Because it's a kids' movie, and it's summer, and kids are... Although, the problem is it opens on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So that kind of stretches it out. But I'm going to say, anyway, I'm going to give it to Turbo, and I'm going to go 45.
45? Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... is that for the five-day? Do you want to take that as the five-day?
Sure.
Take that as the five-day.
Why not?
Five-day. All right. Yeah, I think one of the reasons I'm hearing that Conjuring's tracking the best.
It is tracking well, yes.
And I'm going by the fact that The Purge did well in the summer.
Okay. Summer is such a strange time to release a horror movie.
It is weird. And it's an R-rated horror movie without violence. It's R for, like, violent, like, scariness, which is kind of cool, but...
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone, all the R-rated movie fans would be like... If it were PG-13, they would rage about it.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're raging about it.
We know some of those people who would rage about it.
Why is it R? It shouldn't be R. Anyways. All right. We're going to a break. Some news and DVDs. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr.
I totally forgot what we're talking about.
We're going to talk. We've got a couple news items here. The first one I want to point out is this is, if you at all are interested in film criticism, this is something that happens a lot. Rex Reed does something stupid periodically, about every 6 months. It's been that way.
I think the last one was a little sooner than six months ago.
Whenever Identity Thief came out.
Which was like March. Okay. So it wasn't that long ago.
And then before that was Cabin in the Woods, which was a year ago.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And in this one, the news being there was the movie we talked about last week, VHS 2.
Right.
And apparently Rex Reed watched about 20 minutes in the movie, wrote his review.
And even admitted that he only watched 20 minutes of the movie.
Well, I don't think he did say 20? He said when he left.
Right. Which, if you've seen the movie, you know when that is. And people are saying it's 20 minutes in. So he admitted that he walked out.
Well, the thing is, it's an anthology.
Right.
So what he mentions happens in the first segments.
Right.
So, and the other thing is, when it gets really bloody, he didn't even get to that part. I mean, like the second segment is way bloodier than the first one. But he goes and he writes a scathing review, and to his credit, at least he admits to walking out.
It's true, but he still reviews the movie.
Yeah.
And calls it worthless, pretty much.
Yeah. And how many times have you seen a movie where the first half isn't that good, but it kind of redeems itself in the end? I'm not saying that VHS 2 does.
No, it happens all the time. And with this, it's four or five separate movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're pretty much judging the entire thing on just one movie that you didn't like.
Exactly.
And, yeah, that's just unprofessional.
Rex Reed's an idiot.
Rex Reed.
But, yeah, what was so funny is because I know people in the horror world, and actually the articles that I saw were written, people I know who wrote these, and they're like, how dare he? And I'm like, guys, do you not remember last year? Because he gets, like, he describes the premise of the movie, and he gets things wrong.
Right.
And people are like, wow, is this ridiculous? But don't you remember last year when he did Cabin in the Woods, and he wrote his very spoilery review?
Yeah.
And if you read his review, he gets major facts wrong.
Mm-hmm. The sad thing, I guess, for those of us who are in the business is that Rex Reed is a major critic. Like, he has a big audience and a major publication. And those of us who actually do a professional job of what we do, it makes us kind of angry that, you know, Rex Reed gets so much attention when he's clearly as worthless as VHS 2.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the thing is, I remember Roger Ebert, you know, who recently passed away, people would take issue with some things he'd say sometimes. I remember when Kick-Ass first came out and he really kind of railed against the violence, and then some people were like, well, you don't understand. But at least it was all based on the criticism of the film.
Right.
Roger Ebert was an upstanding guy, and he reviewed what he watched, and he had a work ethic for that.
Mm-hmm.
Rex Reed, I think he's just going insane. I think he maybe got hit on the head.
There are a few critics who I think we could qualify as completely insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, here's the thing. My own view is if you're going to watch a movie, if you're going to review a movie, watch the whole thing. Now, if you happen to doze off in the middle of it, admit it. You don't have to go back and watch it again unless you, like, miss the entire movie. But if you nod off at one point, that's one thing. But to just get up and flat out leave or turn it off.
Right.
That's not acceptable.
No.
I'm sorry. So, Rex Reed, shame on you.
Again.
Go back to school. So what, about Christmas time, he'll do something stupid again?
Something like that. I look forward to that. We'll have something else to talk about on the show.
Award season, 2013.
Yes.
All right. The next news story I want to talk about, and not really a news story, but it dovetails into the DVD section because it is sort of TV. Sharknado was an amazing phenomenon last week.
It was. It was huge.
They replayed it on Thursday. What was so amazing is just how it just kind of blew up on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't great ratings, but it was probably higher ratings than any movie from The Asylum was ever going to get. What other movie can you have sharks in a tornado attacking Tara Reid and Ian Ziering getting eaten by one and chopping his way out with a chainsaw?
Seriously, I mean, this sounds like the greatest movie ever.
What's funny is I wrote an article for Film School Rejects, and it takes place in L.A., and I analyzed, and I said, here's the thing. If a Sharknado is going to happen, it'll happen in Florida.
It's true. I mean, how often do they get tornadoes? And
they don't. They
you know,
do.
Things like that in L.A.
In L.A., California.
I mean, you know, shark earthquake, maybe.
Yeah. Sharkquake. Oh, my God.
Sharkquake.
Sharkquake. You know, they are making a Sharknado 2, and you can tweet sci-fi movies and suggest your sequel titles. And the ones I said you could do is Sharknado 2 was one. Or for the Spanish-speaking market, Sharknados.
Nice.
That, I think, would be a great one. But I think Sharkquake's pretty awesome, too. I think we'll
then
have
it can
to
legitimately
that.
Be set in Southern California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear they're doing it in New York, though. So I don't know what that could be.
What do they get there?
Super shark storm. Because that's what happened.
I guess, yeah.
All right. Sandy Shark?
Sandy Shark.
All right. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr and Chris and Dara Kramer. We are
worn out and brain dead.
We're exhausted. It's been a long week for us. But as we cap off the week, we're going to get to the segment that we like to refer to as the world famous
DVD Roundup.
Yeehaw. Even I can't muster much excitement for the yeehaw. What's interesting is you had Evil Dead come out this week.
Yes.
The remake, which comes out the same week that The Conjuring mm-hmm. is coming out in the theaters. And they're both vying for claiming to be the most terrifying film of all time.
I would say Evil Dead is the bloodiest movie I've seen in a very long time.
It's very gory.
It is really bloody.
I saw somebody, I don't even remember who this was, somebody I knew on Facebook who was a big horror fan, and they're like, it's Evil Dead, it wasn't that good. It could have used more blood. And I'm like,
oh,
did you walk out?
Seriously?
It literally rains blood for 10 minutes.
It does. Yeah, there is no need for more blood in this movie. I think we're good. We're good here.
It's insane.
There are other things that we could have used in this movie, but more blood, not one of them.
Pretty sure they had that covered.
Yeah.
Also out is 42, mm-hmm. which has less blood in it.
It does, fortunately.
But it has Alan Tudyk swearing with racial epithets in it. This is, of course, Jackie Robinson's story, Breaking the Color Barrier.
With Paula Deen, played by Alan Tudyk.
Paula Deen, yes. Got to throw in the Paula Deen comment. This is a decent movie. It's a button pusher.
It is. It's one of those movies that it fits the formula, and you know exactly how it's all going to work out because, well, it's based on a true story, so you have that. But it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the kind of movie that even if you're not a baseball fan, which I'm not a big baseball person, but at the end, you're kind of cheering in your seat there.
It's less about baseball than it is about what happens
right.
with it. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not like there's like the one game. I mean, they do kind of have that.
They have the games.
The
yeah.
game you have to win, but really it's more about him
right.
getting on the field and playing.
Right.
And there's also Bullet to the Head, which is Sylvester Stallone looking almost as
right.
ripped as me.
Nice.
I don't know if that's true.
Oh, that's saying something.
This came out in January and it did terrible.
Did anybody see that? You saw it?
I saw it. Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was okay.
Was there anyone else in the theater?
Well, yeah, I was at a screening. Up in Cleveland. So
oh, okay. Well,
I was there with Nick Harum.
Right.
Yeah. So it was at a time where they're like, okay, we're going to have Bruce Willis doing Die Hard 5 and
Schwarzenegger
with The Last Stand.
The
Last Stand.
Right. Whatever.
Jason Statham with Parker, and none of them did well.
Nope.
So here you go. Bullet to the Head's not bad. It's an okay. It's sort of old school Schwarzenegger. Not, I mean, it's old school Stallone. Same difference.
Whatever.
They're beefy dudes.
Who don't really speak all that well.
Exactly. One of them's, at least one of them, like, is, you know, didn't have it, was English wasn't their native language.
It's true. At least he has that excuse.
There's also some TV shows we can highlight. You've got Damages Season 5 with Glenn Close. You've got Alphas Season 2 without Glenn Close.
Mm-hmm.
That's another sci-fi series. There are no Sharknados in Alpha.
That's too bad.
Matlock, the entire series. For all you old people out there.
Kevin.
I'm not that old. I just feel old after this week. There's also Orphan Black Season 1, which is apparently this spy type show in the UK.
Hmm.
FatGuysOfTheMovies.com has a podcast about that. So if you're curious about that. Solomon Kane is also out. I haven't seen it. They didn't send it to me. Hell on Wheels Season 2. That is out. That's HBO, isn't it? Is it HBO or is that TNT? I think it might be TNT.
I do not know.
It's about the railroad.
Something that I do not watch.
Bad things.
I don't know.
And then Lord of the Flies, the Criterion Collection, the 1962
nice.
Movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Piggy. Ah, poor Piggy. All right, stinker of the week. I'm saying the Smurfs, Smurfs to the Rescue, simply
that,
because...
That sounds about right.
We're getting ready for Smurfs 2 to come out. Sigh.
Yeah.
Lay sigh. All right, let's do the review wrap-up. The Conjuring, you said...
Kinda rocks.
Kinda rocks, I said it rocks. Turbo, I said kinda rocks. You said Red 2.
Kinda rocks.
Almost kinda, almost sort of, almost quite.
Almost nearly rocks.
And then RIPD...
Preemptive suck.
Preemptive suck, because they didn't show it to us. That's it. Next week is the to-do list and the Wolverine and the way, way back.
See ya.